two figures moved further afield. From a nearby hillside, Ford Prefect and Arthur Dent watched the horror of which they could not feel a part. "Filthy, dirty trick to pull," muttered Arthur. Ford scraped a stick along the ground and shrugged. "An imaginative solution to a problem, I'd have thought," he said. "Why can't people just learn to live together in peace and harmony?" said Arthur. Ford gave a loud, very hollow laugh. 42, he said with a malicious grin. "Nope, doesn't work. Never mind." Arthur looked at him as if he'd gone mad, and seeing nothing to indicate to the contrary, realised that it would be perfectly reasonable to assume that this had, in fact, happened. "What do you think will happen to them all?" he said after a while. "In an infinite universe, anything can happen," said Ford. "Even survival. Strange, but true." A curious look came into his eyes as they passed over the landscape and then settled again on the scene of misery below them. "I think they'll manage for a while," he said. Arthur looked up sharply. "Why do you say that?" he said. Ford shrugged. "Just a hunch," he said, and refused to be drawn on any further questions. "Look," he said suddenly. Arthur followed his pointing finger. Down amongst the sprawling masses, a figure was moving, or perhaps lurching would be a more accurate description. He appeared to be carrying something on his shoulder. As he lurched from prostrate form to prostrate form, he seemed to wave whatever the something was at them in a drunken fashion. After a while, he gave up the struggle and collapsed in a heap. Arthur had no idea what this was meant to mean to him. "Movie camera," said Ford, "recording the historic moment." "Well, I don't know about you," said Ford again after a moment, "but I'm off." He sat a while in silence. After a while, this seemed to require comment.
When you say you're off, what do you mean exactly?" said Arthur.
"Good question," said Ford. "I'm getting total silence." Looking over his shoulder, Arthur saw that he was twiddling with knobs on a small black box. Ford had already introduced this box to Arthur as a sub-ether sensormatic, but Arthur had merely nodded absently and not pursued the matter. In his mind, the universe still divided into two parts, the Earth and everything else. The Earth, having been demolished to make way for a hyperspace bypass, meant that this view of things was a little lopsided, but Arthur tended to cling to that lopsidedness as being his last remaining contact with his home. Sub-ether sensormatics belonged firmly in the everything else category. "Not a sausage," said Ford, shaking the thing. Sausage, thought Arthur to himself as he gazed listlessly at the primitive world about him. What I wouldn't give for a good Earth sausage. "Would you believe," said Ford in exasperation, "that there are no transmissions of any kind within light years of this benighted tip? Are you listening to me?" "What?" said Arthur. "We're in trouble," said Ford. "Oh," said Arthur. This sounded like month-old news to him. "Until we pick up anything on this machine," said Ford, "our chances of getting off this planet are zero. It may be some freak standing wave effect in the planet's magnetic field, in which case we just travel round and round till we find a clear reception area. Coming?" He picked up his gear and strode off. Arthur looked down the hill. The man with the movie camera had struggled back up to his feet just in time to film one of his colleagues collapsing. Arthur picked a blade of grass and strode off after Ford.
"I trust you had a pleasant meal," said Zani Whoop to Zaphod and Trillian as they rematerialised on the bridge of the starship Heart of Gold and lay panting on the floor. Zaphod opened some eyes and glowered at him.
"You!" he spat. He staggered to his feet and stomped off to find a chair to slump into. He found one and slumped into it.
"I have programmed the computer with the improbability coordinates pertinent to our journey," said Zani Whoop. "We will arrive there very shortly. Meanwhile, why don't you relax and prepare yourself for the meeting?"
Zaphod said nothing. He got up again and marched over to a small cabinet from which he pulled a bottle of old Jank's spirit. He took a long pull at it.
"And when this is all done," said Zaphod savagely, "it's done, all right? I'm free to go and do what the hell I like and lie on beaches and stuff. It depends what transpires from the meeting, said Zarniwoop.
Zaphod, who is this man? Said Trillian shakily, wobbling to her feet. What's he doing here? Why is he on our ship?
He's a very stupid man, said Zaphod, who wants to meet the man who rules the universe.
Ah, said Trillian, taking the bottle from Zaphod and helping herself. A social climber. The major problem, one of the major problems, for there are several, one of the many major problems with governing people is that of who you get to do it, or rather, of who manages to get people to let them do it to them. To summarise, it is a well-known fact that those people who most want to rule people are, ipso facto, those least suited to do it. To summarise the summary, anyone who is capable of getting themselves made president should, on no account, be allowed to do the job. To summarise the summary of the summary, people are a problem. And so this is the situation we find. A succession of galactic presidents who so much enjoy the fun and palaver of being in power that they very rarely notice that they're not. And somewhere in the shadows behind them, who? Who can possibly rule if no one who wants to do it can be allowed to?